Raised Rowdy.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. My name is Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nick Tressler.
And welcome, Adam Sanders. Thank you, buddy.
What's up, boys?
Yeah. What's up, brother? Thanks for being here.
Happy New Year to you guys.
Happy New Year to you, too. This is our first day back podcasting in the new year, and we're happy to have you here with us, brother.
Man, thank you. I feel like this has been a long time coming. Like, we were literally talking when I first got here that we've known each other for many years, played lots of Raised Rowdy events.
Yeah.
But we haven't really had a chance to, like, sit down outside of, like, a bar scene to, like, really just hang. And so, man, I this is something I've been looking forward to all week.
Me too, man. It's always great when you know someone a little bit before you get in the room with them. It makes the initial conversation start off easy. Usually by the end, me and Kurt will get them, like, a little greased up where they're comfortable. But, you know, we're already know you very well and comfortable. And, man, what a 2025 you had, too.
Wow, what a ride.
Yeah,
man, it was incredible. It's something that, you know, being a part of the road
you know,
and winning the road. You know, I never in a million years thought that I would ever be a part of a singing competition show.
Yeah.
You know, when you think of singing competitions, you think of, like, The Voice and American Idol.
Yep.
And nothing against those shows, but that's just something that didn't really appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that I would kind of get my big break through, like, songwriting or, you know, just grinding it out and playing shows on the road, which is what I was doing up to that point for the last 10 years. And when I got a cold email to be a part of the road, and when I learned the concept of the road and how it involved playing in front of real fans, in front of a major touring act, playing original music, full band, like, it just kind of felt like the perfect win-win for me, you know, as an artist. And so, man, what a great opportunity, great experience. I've got nothing but great things to say about it.
Why didn't I get an email to do that? Did you get an email, Nick?
No, Kelby played in the band.
Oh, from Cali 3?
Yeah.
Oh, that's badass.
Yeah, Miles McPherson was drummer.
Okay.
You know, had Kelby, man, like, just a stacked lineup, but they probably thought you were too good looking, like, to you outshine everybody, so they didn't call you.
Well, I'll pretend that's true.
No, I was talking to Kurt about that, too. I was just talking about, you know, television's a little bit weird sometimes.
Yeah.
And, of course, like, it's made to be a television show, right?
Yeah.
But I thought this was cool. And, like, how they formatted it, like you saying, like, in front of live fans, like, fan votes, in front of an act that people are wildly excited to see, getting to play original music, you know, because it seems like a lot of those shows you're honestly playing covers more than you are original music. And this is, like, not only original songs, but, like, you know, you hear about, like, on an American Idol, they'll give you a song to sing at the end of it.
Yeah.
It's like, you guys have been dedicating your lives and careers to building out music that you're proud of, and it's cool to get to showcase that on the show.
Well, to that point, you know, I think that the vision for the show was birthed from Blake Shelton and Lee Metzger. And Blake Shelton and Lee Metzger both worked on The Voice together. And I think, from what I have sort of been told through the grapevine, was, you know, Blake was a little frustrated with the fact that, for whatever reason, The Voice wasn't producing stars. And I think, like, what the synopsis was we're basically making these artists glorified karaoke singers.
Yeah.
You know, and what happens a lot of times is, you know, an artist goes on, wins, you know, The Voice, and then they say, okay, now let's find what you sound like. And a lot of times these artists, you know, to no fault of their own, haven't necessarily built their brand per se. And so when it becomes time to figure out what they want to sound like, it takes them a year or two to build that. Then all the momentum has kind of went down. And so it's kind of a hard grind to get back up, you know, from that initial push. And so I think their vision was, is we want to find guys and girls that have been making a living at being artists and traveling the road, you know, playing shows, that is just a moment away from getting to the next level. You know, guys and girls that have built their brands, but just kind of need that extra little push. And, you know, I think they did such a great job of finding just diverse artists.
Like, talent. Yeah.
There was, for whatever type of country music you like, there was an artist that represented that style of music, all the way from Red Dirt music to Americana to, you know, someone like me that's more of a, you know, birth from, like, 90s country roots. And then you've got a guy like Channing Wilson, who is kind of that outlaw, you know, Waylon throwback. And then, you know, Cassidy Daniels, who can just sing the phone book and hit every note that there is and just got this big powerful voice. So we were all so different and diverse in what we do.
I agree. I think that's one of the coolest parts about watching it. And, you know, I'm good friends with Cass, so of course, like, we've been And she even wore some Razor Rowdy gear on the show, which was sick.
Yeah.
But it was cool to watch it. But and that's when I think it was really well done. The only other show that I think that was like comparable to me was that one that Travis Tritt was involved with.
Okay.
Which wasn't even on. I don't think it was on a major network, so it didn't.
I've never heard of this.
I forget the name of it, but I'll send it to you guys after. But he was involved with the show, and Dave Kennedy was on it. And it That's was original music, yeah. too, but I think it was on, like, USA or, like, one of those stations, so it didn't get as much, like, big exposure. So it's just, like, those ones feel real,
yeah.
you know? Like, I mean, you're hearing the real stories of everyone in all those shows, but, like, this felt like these are people that have been living, breathing, eating, sleeping, loving country music.
Yeah.
And this is, like... Again, like, you've had lots of success as a songwriter, you know, like, touring. This is just a catalyst that can help you get it to the next level.
Exactly.
And that's what I loved about it.
Yeah, you know, I feel like, you know, we had all were ready for that position and that time in our
yeah.
career. And I honestly can say for me personally, you know, the 10 years that I've been out playing shows and writing songs and recording prepped me for that moment.
Yeah.
Right there, you know, and so I felt like I was so ready and prepared for that. And from the very beginning, it was just a gut feeling that it was something that I, you know, wanted to do. And, you know, it obviously worked out and, you know, great experience.
It's so cool. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, we are in Nashville, so we get to see some of the back end of music and, you know, how it's like a little bit how it made, of course, Kurt more than me getting to be in session work and things like that. But I think it did a pretty good job of like showcasing some of that and mixing in with it, like personalities and people, you
For
know,
sure.
like who everybody is, which yeah. is one of the things that like you can do on social media. But I think this is kind of like gave a little bit of like a different view on that.
Well, the cool thing was, too, is, you know, like you said earlier, it is TV.
Yeah.
But they did the best job possible, I feel like, to make it as authentic as you can be.
Yeah.
And there wasn't necessarily like a host of the show.
Yeah.
And so when they're interviewing us, we're able to tell our versions of our careers through our eyes. So whatever we feel like, we're representing ourselves in a way. So it's not a situation where, you know, they bring you in and they say, we need to brand you as this type of artist or that type yeah. of artist. Like, you get to truly be yourself. And the great thing is, you know, as artists, as songwriters, as, you know, musicians, I think we all have our secret weapon,
yeah.
you know, that makes us who we are. And what I thought was really cool is you could identify in all 12 acts what their secret weapon was, and it was basically kind of pitting out all 12 secret weapons to see what would win. Whether it's, okay, who's the best singer?
Yeah.
Probably Cassidy.
Yeah.
Okay. I lean more in the, you know, entertainment. I want to bring the fans into what I'm doing, you know, so yep. showman. And then you've got, you know, Forrest, who's on the show. That's Americana singer. Man, his personality is just so loving and warm, and he just has the ability to make you smile. And the second he walks on stage and says a, you know, quick little joke, you feel like he's, you know, a long-lost brother you never had. And so
yeah.
that was what was kind of cool, was like, all right, like, we're all taking our strengths that make us who we are and sort of pitting it out against each other, you know, and letting the fans sort of decide.
I love that. And the fan voting element to it, I think, is huge, too,
yeah.
right? Live crowd, too. Like, those
people that
were there.
Well, they're the ultimate consumer, you know? Yeah. It's like, sure, you could have a panel of judges that sort of give their quote-unquote, you know, professional critique, you know, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, the fans are the one that's going to listen to the music,
yeah.
you know, and so for me, I feel like I did have a little bit of an advantage going into this with Keith Urban as being the headliner. I felt like my music sort of fit in Keith Urban's world a little bit better than some of the other artists, and so
yeah.
that was probably a little bit of an advantage for me.
Yeah.
But I also feel like I understood the parameters really early on what it was going to take to win the show, meaning, you know, we were given two songs a night. We would do an original song and
yeah.
then a cover.
Yeah.
And we were doing cut down versions of those songs. So you're really yeah. only doing two half songs. So you've got a total of 3 minutes per se.
Yep.
And so you had a very short window to connect with the audience because they had your fate in their hands,
yeah.
you know, how they voted. And you
and that
had
was on the phone.
Yeah. So they would basically come to a Keith Urban show that was a pop-up show. These fans would wait outside all day. they would get in this venue and they would make them sign an NDA. They would lock their phones in like a locked device, like you would go to a comedy show. Mm-hmm. And then one in every 10 randomly, they would just give a voting device to someone. And so scattered in this crowd of, you know, 2,000 people, 1,500 people is, you know, people scattered one in every 10 that has a voting device. And that when everyone gets in the venue, the producers would come out and say, all right, you're here to see a Keith Urban show. But what we're also here doing is we're filming for a new series called The Road. You guys are going to see X amount of opening acts. And if you got a voting device, you're going to have 2 minutes after they perform to vote 1 to 10 on how well you thought they performed. And then they would take an average of those scores, and that's how they would sort of rank us throughout the night. And whoever got the lowest average, you know, would go home, and then the rest would continue. So the fans, like, they're sort of blindsided by this, but you could tell that, like, early on in the night, they're still trying to figure out what's going on. And then when they realize what's happening, you can see that, like, the fans just lied. Like, they want to be a part of it even more, you know? So I even felt like being later in the opening act slot was a better position.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you got a, if you, you think about it, if you had a fan base that's set outside in the freezing cold for 4 hours to get in this door, they walk in and they're finally like, all right, finally in, let's go get a drink, you know? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, all right, the first act's out. They're still trying to get acclimated to the night and the room. And so by the time you get three or four in, they've had a drink or two. They're a little loose. They've heard some music, you know? And so I kind of feel like they're a little bit more open to what's happening.
Yeah.
And then they're, you know, they're obviously there to see Keith Urban. So most of the time they're kind of like, you know, these guys and girls are great, but I'm here to see Keith Urban, you know? So like I said, it was just a really cool, organic way to kind of showcase what we do as artists and, you know, let the fans decide.
Yeah, I love that. It's so interesting too, like thinking of that, because, you know, the first person you're rating, that's your benchmark that you're building for everyone else. Is this person better or worse, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't really have a gauge. Yeah, you know, sort
they're
of
gauging them against the last Keith Urban show they went to, which is probably 12. You know,
yeah. Which is why for me, honestly, I felt like a lot of times I had to overperform. Because think about it, Keith Urban is such a performer. Like, he's like the triple threat in my mind. He can sing them, he can play them, he can write them. You know, like he can do it all. But he has this swagger about him, and he's such a good showman that I think a Keith Urban fan expects interaction and a showman, you know? And so I leaned into that as much as I could to say, you know, like, I would come out, and I felt like I was having to overperform, almost like, how's everybody doing tonight? Da, 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 you know, sort of thing. Like, I almost had to, like make them turn and pay attention, you know, to me. And then, you know, I would get into, you know, a song. And so, but yeah, I just felt like I did what it took to win, you know. And, and sometimes I made decisions based off of what was going to get me through the next round and saving songs for later in the show. Yeah. Like, I'll never forget, I think it was the first show or the second show, Gretchen Wilson came up to me during rehearsal, and she says, hey, I think you should do as one of your covers a Brooks and Dunn song. And I said, I'm saving that for the Ryman, which is the finale.
Yeah.
And she kind of looked at me and she was like, how do you know you're going to make it to the Ryman? And I said, I don't, but I know if I make it there, I've got to have a moment to win this thing.
Yeah.
Because we're up against some great competition. And she just kind of was taken back and said, okay.
That's
and
a cool moment.
Yeah, you know, and so, like, I literally, when I picked my songs for the show, I started with the finale first. I wanted to save what I felt like was my best performance for when it mattered the most.
Yeah.
But I also, I picked the last show, then I picked the first show, and then I picked second to last, and I picked the second show. And my thought process was, okay, come out of the gate with something that gives the fans an impression that you're one to beat. But then, through the middle of the show, you don't necessarily have to win every night, but just get to the next show.
Yeah.
So save your best stuff for, you know, that seventh, eighth, ninth inning. You know, it's like the closer that can close and win the game.
Yeah. Mariano Rivera is here, I believe, by Brooks and Dunn or whatever. Yeah.
There you go. So that was my thought process. And so, and I even remember, you know, some of the contestants, you know, 5 or 6 shows in, they were a little nervous because they were like, man, like, I'm kind of digging deep in my catalog, you know, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I'm just getting to the best part of mine, you know? Yeah. And so I just, you know, so it was a weird spot to be in because you want everyone to succeed and win. But at the end of the day, it is a competition,
yeah.
You know, and you've got to go into this with blinders on of like, hey, I have to do this for my career. Of course, I want everyone to do their part and, you know, have great things. But I was so locked in, focused, and I really felt like, again, from my experience to me being so locked in and strategic about all of it is what ultimately was able to help me win the show.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I think, honestly, too, like,
that's awesome.
Your catalog of songs that you've written, like, you're not just an artist, like, you are a hit songwriter as well. So, like, you probably had a deeper catalog, maybe not than like guys like Channing who've been doing it as long, but than some of the people that are more like just artist focused.
One of the cool things was, is, you know, as my cover, a couple nights I performed a song that I had written for other artists as my cover, but I was the writer on it. So it gave me the ability to say, hey, you know, this is my first number one that I, you know, wrote for my buddy Cole Swindell. Here's Ain't Worth the Whiskey. And the fans, yeah. I felt like it gave a little bit of validation of like, well, dang, like, we didn't know you wrote that. Like, that sounds pretty good. You know, like, he's obviously been in town doing it a while. And so it just kind of like gave a professionalism side to it, I feel like, and showed fans that, you know, we weren't just artists that just kind of started making TikToks, you know, last week. You know, we've been doing this for a long time.
Mm. Yeah, true, absolutely. Artists. Yeah, and I think that's one of the cool things that got captured through that show, too, is, like, I mean, even, like, guys like, Channing has hits, too, you know? And has been doing it a long time, and even more songs that, like, in Nashville we get to hear that either maybe the national public doesn't, you know.
Is
that song you're talking about?
Well, you know, how many times have we been in a Raised Rowdy environment or just whatever writer's round, and we have heard for 10 years Channing sing, I've heard that train whistle morning, and we've all loved it for years, and now the world is finally catching on of like, where's this been, you know, sort of thing. So, so cool, like, for guys like him, that have those types of songs to believe in them for that long to still keep performing them, even though they may not have like had the success that he felt like it was, but it's truly who he is. Mm-hmm. And he just keeps doubling down on that song. And because of that, like, how easy would it have been for him to just say, man, I want to do something new. You know, like, I've performed this song for 10 years. I'm kind of tired of it. But he was like, no, this is me, you know? And like now, I mean, I think I saw the other day, like, his album was like, you know, on the iTunes charts, you know, the top three, you know, like, so that's amazing for him.
Yeah. Yeah, and it, you always feel like there's people, you know, all the time that just hasn't necessarily gotten their dues. You know, I'm sure you have
a million
tons of friends, probably even feel like yourself is that, you know, it's like, so it's super cool for that platform to give a light to those people that maybe didn't, that have been working their butts off.
Yeah.
You know,
and saying
how cool it is.
We talk about this all the time. Like, you could comb through Nashville and find guys and girls with so much talent that it baffles you every day. Like, how has this person not had their shot?
Yeah.
You know, and like, man, I just go back to, like, at some point with all of this, and I'll give you just a little bit of my own journey and perspective.
Please.
Like, I was a guy that started singing when I was 2 or 3 years old. This is all I've ever thought about doing. And the fate of how I got my start in country music was when I was 12 years old, my uncle, who's a session musician, Scotty Sanders, still guitar player, he called one day and he said, hey, Adam, have you ever thought about writing songs? And at 12 years old, like, that did not compute to my brain. I just knew that Alan Jackson was like my childhood idol, and I wanted to move to Nashville one day and be like Alan Jackson. He said, hey, you should look into writing songs. That could be your way into the industry one day. I know you're planning on moving when you graduate high school, essentially. So I hung up the phone the next day. My dad helped me write my first song.
Do you remember the name of it?
Me and You or something. I just can't give up on Me and You. Like, you know, just the most simple thing ever, you know. And so I started writing in high school, realized that I loved, like, the creative process. It was very therapeutic. I would go to these, you know, field parties with all my high school friends and, you know, sit around a fire, and I'd bring my guitar. And at the end of the night, you know, after we got done, you know, listening to all the, you know, latest and greatest songs on the radio, I'd break my guitar out and I'd play a few covers. And then I'd say, I'm going to play you one I wrote, you know, this week. And they'd all be like, oh, man, that's awesome. So fast forward, I moved to Nashville. I'm here for 2 years working in construction with my dad, and I get my first publishing deal in December of 2012. And it was exactly how I got my start, all because my uncle planted a seed when I was 12 years old that it just kind of like I just walked through the door that he sort of showed me. And, you know, so that was like incredible. And then you fast forward that into, you know, having success as a songwriter. You know, by the time I was 23, 24, I had two number ones on the radio, like, which is crazy,
yeah.
You know, like to think about, you know, looking back on it, you know, but for me at the time, I was still so young and green that I was like, hey, I've put in the time, I've put in the work. This is what's supposed to be happening. You know, like this is like the progression of my career, not understanding how rare like that was. And so, you know, having that spills over into my artist career, start releasing music. And then I go on this journey of like 10 years of just like independent artist, making some waves, but like slowly, slowly building. But never this like white hot moment of like, boom, I've arrived. And so a few years ago, like in 2023, man, you know, I was in a spot where like I had just felt like I had just worked my tail off, and I was manufacturing a lot of my success through my work ethic, and you know, which is a great thing to have. But I also felt like I was in this position where I was like, Lord, I feel like if I am not working as hard as I'm working, none of the things that I do have as that are successful would be happening. So I felt like I was kind of manifesting my own career, and in a way, that's kind of a dangerous place to be in. Like, you don't want to be like, you know, conceited of like, this is all me. I did this all myself. When reality, we all have team members, and we all have publishers, and we all have band members, you know, that are helping all of this and kind of helping steer the ship. And so I sort of had a prayer that I was like, Lord, I could work circles around people in Nashville, but at some point, you have to open doors for me that I can't open for myself. Like, because the ones that make it to the level of the Luke Combs and, you know, Morgan Wallen to the world, there is a fate that's involved with all of this that has to just happen and line up. And a lot of times, yes, they have talent, but there's something that just like falls into place that like you can't explain. It just sort of happens.
Yeah, it can be timing, or it can be
right song, right time. You met the right manager, you know, whatever, you know. And so back to, there's so many artists that's out there that are deserving of this spot through their work ethic and their talents, but for whatever reason, the fate of all of it just hasn't lined up correctly. And so for me, back to 2023, I just sort of took my hands off the wheel and I said, Lord, you open doors for me that I can't open myself, and close the doors that aren't meant for me. I'm still going to work as hard as I work, but I'm sort of like getting in the passenger seat here and letting you drive the car. And that's when I had a song back on country radio with a song called Tough People for Drew Baldridge. Mm-hmm, yeah. And, you know, then got this opportunity for the road. And none of those things were things that I facilitated. It was just kind of out of the blue. It just sort of manufactured itself. And so,
by years of hard work.
Yeah, you know, but yeah. but I also say that like there's a little bit of fate that's kind of happening with me in my career. I've been doing what I've been doing for the last 12 years. I'm just now in a position for people to find out my journey and what I'm doing. And my plan is just to continue to do what I've always done, but also take the pressure off a little bit of like, hey, I've gotten this far in this past year by sort of saying, hey, I'm just a passenger. And I feel like that's a great place to be. And it takes the pressure off. And the, you know, how many artists do we see that, you know, you can tell they're just beat down, you know, from trying so hard, and they kind of are in this position of like, you know, they pray that prayer. Is this what I'm supposed to be doing with my life?
Yep.
And you know, they're struggling with the success they've had, but also like the love and the effort that they've put into this. And that's just that's a hard place to be. And so I realized that writing songs, recording, playing shows is what I do. It's what I will always do, no matter to the success that it brings. you know, if I wasn't doing this, I'd still be doing
that
this. You know,
it's that.
Yeah.
And so I've gotten out of that like feeling of, man, is this all there is? Is this what I'm really supposed to be doing? Like, I've identified this is me. This is what I do. And so regardless if I would have won the road and regardless what happens next, I'm always going to do what I love to do because it's what I love to do. There is no amount of success that says, well, if I don't reach this level, I just quit, you know, because like this is my life. This is what I do, you know, so we'll see what happens moving forward, you know?
Yeah, I love that too. And I mean, honestly, success, what is the version of success? That level is different for every person. And I'm sure every 6 months it changes for each person, mm-hmm. you know?
I mean, I've had my own goals I've set and it's probably, I need to set some new ones because I remember working in a bar when I was living in Boston and I'm like, if I could just make rent and not have to work in a fucking restaurant and if I could just, I was playing wedding in a wedding band. I'm like, if I could just play a few more gigs, then I wouldn't have to work in a restaurant. Then that'd be all I ever need.
Content. Yeah.
You know,
and then like, you do that yeah. and then it's like, man, if I just could move to Nashville and yeah, you know, get a paying
maybe
gig,
own a house, you know, and then, you know, it's like, It's never ending, but you know there's got to be a certain amount of gratefulness of like I'm not working in a restaurant anymore. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, it's easy to lose sight of that of how blessed yes. we are. You True. Know, because like I've said this, we're in the NFL. Like there is thousands of people that would love to have signed a publishing deal, to have a song on an album, mm-hmm. a number one song, to be able to go and. You know, open for, you know, biggest acts in our format. And all of those are different levels. But even at the starting gate of just like, man, I just wish I lived in Nashville and wrote songs with or without a publishing deal. You know, like that is like, there's so many people in this world that wish that they could do that. So we do forget how blessed we are that we're you know, we're not working at a desk job every day or, you know, saying, hey, you want fries with that, you know, sort of thing. Yeah. And sometimes you have to go do those things to further your career. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to the level that, you know, we've all been able to achieve, like, this should be fun, you know, like we're getting to do the thing, you know, yeah. each day.
And you always have goals and are trying to stretch yourself and work it out. But yeah, I always say that. I'm like, I've had plenty of crappy jobs and this isn't one of them, mm-hmm. you know?
Man, I had a thought too on what you said about, like, what is success?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you guys can relate to this at all, and I'll like give it through like an artist's perspective is, you know, you've got friends and family that's followed your career for so long and behind closed doors, you know, they're kind of like you hear them talk about, you know, man, like whatever happened to such and such, you know, and like he just never quite made it, did he? You know, like sort of thing, you know, because they see success as like selling out stadiums and on a label and, you know, songs on the radio. Okay, and I've compared when someone says that, you know, like, and they say to my career, like, man, like, keep going, like, you're gonna make it, you know, sort of thing. And in my mind, I'm like, you don't understand. I've already made it,
right.
you know. And here's how I can tell you that. Okay, what would be a better route of success? Would you rather be an artist that signs to a label, that you sign a bad deal, and they're gonna own everything that you bring in? And you're going to end up, let's just say, with 3 number ones on the radio, okay? And then when you retire and you get to be 65 years old, you look back and you see a few plaques on the wall that says, I had 3 number ones on the radio. But you look at your bank account and there's not much to show for it because the label, the deal you signed, went mostly to them to recoup your deal. Or what if you're an independent artist that doesn't make the gross amount of what this made over here, but you owned 100% of it. And at the end of the day, well, I didn't get a number one on radio, but I made $1 million and, you know, in that time period that, you know, things were good. And now I've got a little bit of retirement. And if I want to keep playing shows, I can play shows, but I don't have to if I don't want to.
Yeah.
You know, like I can take the money that the music made me and take it and put it somewhere else. So, like, what is success? Like, you know, so like, is it a plaque or is it like, hey, I can retire now. I don't have to do this if I don't want to. A lot of guys and girls, you know, we see I'm sure they still do it for the love of it, but we all know those artists that are out there that are still grinding at such a later age, and a lot of times it's because they have to. Like, that is where their income is to go play these festivals and fairs, because that's where they can still make their money. All their money that they made off their albums and stuff was, you know, it went to someone else's
They're
pocket.
Still recouping it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting play, too, and funny enough, we had like a conversation with one of our buddies recently about kind of that exact thing. And it's like, I think for every artist, it's different, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And some people are just in their head. They're like, my art getting to the most people possible is what I want. Mm-hmm. I don't care if I make a dime off of it. And then there's people that run it like a legitimate business, which is probably the smarter thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, again, each person's making their own swings, but like the ability to have control over how it's getting released, the ability to have control over when
Great
it's being
point.
Released.
Great point.
You know, the ability to actually get to figure out how you want to do it and what you want to do it and the people that you want to do it with.
Yes.
You know?
And I have friends also, another version of that. We all know so many artists, right? That
yeah.
They want to win ACM Male Artist of the Year, you know, because Alan Jackson did.
Yep.
Or, you know, or Entertainer of the Year. And they want to win those awards. And it's like, you can't really get there unless you play the game. But then we have friends that are like so proudly independent, and they're like, we found our version of success. So there's yeah. different ways to skin the cat,
yeah.
pun somewhat intended, the guy in the hat. But there's just different ways of doing it. But I think in 2026, it's more viable to be an independent artist than it's ever been.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
Yeah, I think it's and like Drew is like such a cool way because like he went to radio.
Yes.
And he had his own radio team.
Yeah.
So you can do anything.
I think that's a great segue to talk about kind of like the conclusion of the road as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as part of the thing coming into it, you know, the carrot dangled in front of you is getting to play Stagecoach.
Yeah.
The Red Bull Jukebox next year.
Yes.
$250,000, which is great.
Yeah.
And then also like a recording contract.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk a little bit about that? Like, I know... like it's kind of come out like in like little bits of news that wasn't the option that you decided to go with. Like, why don't we kind of talk through that? Like, having seen now that you're thinking about it like a business, as most business owners should.
Yeah. Well,
know, talk through
that. The great thing about the road was they were so pro artist that they literally gave us the option to take the record deal or not, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, that's incredible for them to recognize if it's not the right situation for an artist, then we don't want to hold you to this, you know? And so that was really cool. Honestly, for me, the whole purpose of doing the road for me was I felt like I was in a season of like being stagnant in my career. Like, I was searching for what is next, like what is going to help me kind of like just get the shot in the arm to get to the next level, and also like refuel me and my fire and my drive, because I just kind of felt like I was just kind of like, just for the first time in my career, just kind of like unsure of what's next. And so I took this opportunity as a way to just hopefully boost my career to the next level. I didn't really do this like thinking this is record deal or, you know, bust for me. The thing I look forward to the most was like the ability to play like an event of Stagecoach. Like, yeah. I've always said, the bigger the stage, the bigger the crowd, you know, give me all the lights and the smoke, the better I am at what I do. Like, I want that, you know, that's like the top of, you know, performing for me. And so like that was like a big draw for me. And then the money obviously is like really cool, you know, to have. By the time Uncle Sam gets his, you know, portion of it, you know, that 250 is gonna, you know, dwindle pretty quick. But yeah, you know, the record deal, when it came, you know, when winning the show, when it was presented to me, for whatever reason, I can just tell you that, you know, like the road itself was such a gut feeling to do this, and the record deal side of it, for whatever reason, I just did not feel it was the right thing for me at this time in my career. And so I decided to walk away from it. You know, I know that, you know, the label's going to crush everything that they do on their own, and I'm excited to see, you know, where they go from here. But my thought is like, man, I feel like you're only like a guy like me, and maybe I'm just in my head a little bit about this. Every label in Nashville knows of me. You know, I've had meetings with everyone in town. And it's always been a conversation of, it's not a pass, but it's just not a not right now, you know, sort of thing. And so I feel like if I'm ever going to achieve the dreams that I have of being on radio and those types of things, you probably have to have that machine behind you. There's the anomalies of, you know, Drew Baldridge that kind of just broke the system in a way. But let's be honest, how many times is that really going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, it's already like getting a label deal is like winning the lottery, but that would be like trying to win the lottery three times in a row. You know, like, yeah, that's just unheard of.
Yeah, it's like landing a helicopter on a lily pad.
Yeah. You know, and so, my thought was, is if I'm ever afforded my shot at radio, I just want to make sure that it feels the best possible way for me to achieve those goals. And I was a little unsure of that with this. And so I just decided, you know, hey, let's just do what I've always done and just keep working and grinding and keep building this thing. I mean, look at a guy like Cody Johnson. How many times do you think he was probably passed on in labels? Or how many deals did he probably turn down that he just didn't feel like was the right situation? And he built his career independently all the way up to where he was selling out the Houston Rodeo on his own independently. And then he was in a position to where he could afford to take a little bit more favorable of a deal in his side and maybe have a little bit more leverage with song choices or, you know, whatever it may be. And, you know, so that obviously paid off for him to be able to just kind of keep holding out for a little bit. So my message is, you know, I'm definitely, you know, not anti-label. You know, I'm excited to see what comes of this now and to sort of get the news out that I didn't sign the deal and to see if there's, you know, any partners that want to, you know, take some, you know, meetings and conversations and, you know, see if we can ultimately find that right home that helps me just further my career.
Yeah, that makes sense. And honestly, like, one of the things we hear oftentimes with artists that are having like moments is like, okay, if you want to go to radio, that's when the label makes sense.
Yeah.
As long as that's something that the label does extremely well, you know, yeah. And like the majors, of course, have all been doing that for extremely well.
And it doesn't always work. We know that, mm-hmm. You know, but, you know, those major labels, they've got a track record. Like, you can see where they have broken artists through radio. You know, so there is always going to be some sort of gamble when it,
yeah,
because, you know, switching from independent to label, there's got to be a lot of trust and it's always going to be a gamble. And I feel like you just have to just go off your gut, you know, like where I've gotten to this point is off of a gut feeling. And, I want to keep trusting that, but also, you know, looking for little signs, you know, from God of like, hey man, like it felt right to do the show. It worked out. We won the show. Now what's next? I don't really know, but we'll see. You know, who knows?
Yeah. I love that.
Song, right? There's a song in there for sure.
Yeah.
Something wrong. Oh, yeah. I went,
no, and I think that's an important part. Like, I don't think there's anything that if you put a template on someone's table and said, this is how you do it, this is how it's going to work, that doesn't work for everyone.
No.
Right? Yeah. Everybody's artistry is different. Everybody's career is different. Those moments when they happen, what stage in your life you are when they happen, mm-hmm. That's all of it, right? And realistically, like we talked about before where you said like there's people that you have on your team that are helping. Finding the people that for you feel like they're the right people and they're the ones that you want to lock arms with and push forward doesn't mean that the other people aren't incredibly talented. It just means these are the people that you feel like are the right people to push forward with.
Absolutely. I mean, at some point, everyone is a nobody, you know, mm-hmm. in the business. And, you know, how many times have we seen, let's take Luke Bryan's manager, you know, Kerry Edwards, you know, for an example. Before Luke Bryan became Luke Bryan, Kerry Edwards was his manager. She didn't really have a track record. Like, she just believed in him. And look what she has built because he had enough, like, faith in her and what she brought. And I'm sure that she justified her position as being his manager when he probably could have gotten lured away from bigger names or the bigger track record. So to your point, it's all about finding, you know, the people you want to do this with. Because, and I've always said, you're only as good as your team. You know, I can write, you know, the best song there is or, you know, or be a great performer, but there's so many people behind the scenes that make all this happen, you know, and, yeah. and has to help facilitate some of this, you know, that you got to have them in order to just continue to, you know, further this thing along.
I agree. And honestly, I think that is reciprocal on both sides, right? Like an artist can be wildly talented, but if they don't have the drive,
yeah.
if they don't push, if they're not in to do the things that it takes to do to get to the level of where they want to get, that team can only do so much.
Correct.
Right. So it really takes finding the right artist that really you believe in. You as an artist finding the people on the other side of that that you believe in and then pushing forward.
Absolutely.
You know, and honestly, like you said with like Luke Bryan, like he knew that that person was the right person for him. Mm-hmm. Does that mean she's the right manager for every artist in country music? Probably not.
Yeah.
Right. But that's who together they got to push forward and be successful with, you yeah. know. And that's a honestly a powerful thing, but it's also that's why there isn't just one record label, although like maybe Universal would like it to be just one. You know, but like
they probably got enough money. They could probably buy everybody yeah. out if they ultimately wanted to.
But that's yeah. why there's options. And yeah. that's why there's 100 million different people that are artist managers across all the genres. You know what I mean? There's just so many options for finding your people, you know, it's yeah. like, that's why it's not just William Morris Endeavor is the yeah. only booking company for everyone, right?
Man, it just, all of the whole music industry feels like the Wild Wild West to me. There's yeah. so many ways now
yep.
to make it. Like country music in my mind, like I always compare it to like a vending machine versus Costco. Like back in the 90s, early 2000s, you could only find the music that was on like the radio, yep. you know, like, and that was a vending machine. It's like they would say, you got a choice between this bag of Frito-Lays or, you know, this Snickers bar. And if you're hungry, that's what you get. Mm-hmm. Now it's like Costco. Like you could walk any aisle and find anything that you want. And the artists have, or the fans have the ability to say, you know what? Like I've never heard of this brand of chips before, but Sweet Honey Barbecue sounds pretty nice to me, you know, like yeah. sort of thing. And then they try it, and if they like it, they like it, and they keep buying it, you know. So
yep.
that's and there's so many different ways to get that music out there these days, whether it's, you know, social media, playing shows, you know, podcasts, you know. Yeah. I mean, like it's cool. I think it for me, it's instead of looking at it from a 30,000 foot view of like, oh my God, I don't even know where to begin. I look at it from a standpoint of like, here's the cool thing. You could fail at these 15 things, but this one way could be the way that it works for you. But at least you've got 16 options to figure out how to make it work. There's not just a one-way street anymore.
Yeah.
There's less gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. It's like I look at my career. It's like my first touring act, first time playing for someone that was on the radio and on a tour bus was with Janet Kramer. She broke into the industry by being an actress first, who played a singer on TV. But she liked singing, of course. Yeah. But she's like, I want to sing country music as my character. And they were like, okay. So she, that her song, you know, made her blow up in that way. Then I played for Michael Ray, and he was on a singing show.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Which you have a song with him, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, yeah.
So Real Men Love Jesus.
That's right. And yeah. I played your song many times on stage.
Nice.
Which is really cool. And then, you know, then I... You know, with Luke, he was kind of like a, what was the name of that app?
Vine.
Vine. He was like a Vine star yeah. at first, you know, and did it the kind of grassroots way, which is so three complete different artists with three different ways that came up and got famous and, you know, got to the point where they were successful.
Have you ever heard the story that Jordan Walker tells about the first time he met Luke in a bar?
I would love to hear this. Oh, I love boy. Any Jordan Walker story.
Man, Jordan has become one of my really good friends and writing buddies. And, you know, he used to be a part of a group called Walker McGuire. You know, they had some great success. And, you know, in the height of all of that, they started having some real success and, you know, song on radio. And he just decided, man, I want to be a family man and just be a songwriter. And so really got to know him well over the last few years and written a lot of songs. But we played a lot of writers' rounds together. And he tells this story. He wrote When It Rains, It Pours. Mm-hmm. And he tells this story about... the first night he met Luke Combs, and this is so much to your point of like you just never know. So he says that he is at Losers, you know, one night, and this guy walks in a pair of shorts and Crocs,
yep.
and, you know, and a Kevin Harvick T-shirt, you know, and ball cap on, and you know he walks up and he's like, "Hey, buddy, what's your name?" He said, "I'm Luke." He said, "Oh yeah." He said, "What are you?" what are you doing in town? You know, he said, well, he said, I bounce, you know, over at the bar right across the street. And he said, well, did you move to Nashville to be a bouncer or, you know what? He said, no, I'm going to be a country music singer. And he said, he looked him up and down and said, sure you are, buddy.
You know, a lot of people said that to Luke.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And, but like before Luke Combs, there was a look like of like what you had to look like to be an artist. And Luke Combs did not let that bother him, you know, and he said, no, I'm going to be a country music artist. Turns out he's a big country music artist. By God, he's outselling everybody in the world, you know. So to your point, you know, it looks so different from everyone. It may not be the shiniest toy that's over here, or you may not have been the best singer, but you grew and you figured out how to be a better singer, or, you know, like just so many different avenues and, you know, ways to make it these days where it's just, like I said, it's a Wild West.
I agree with that. Yeah. And we always talk about, like, what's the thing, the spark that makes an artist go, right? Mm-hmm. And it's different for everyone. Like, you know, some guys are great looking and that gets the people to pay attention. And some people have that big voice, like you talked about. Like, everybody's gift is different. And the key to it is getting the fans to see your gift and figuring out the best way to express it to them to make them come back and keep on.
I think you called it a secret weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, secret weapon.
Yeah,
I've heard you say that kind of same thing before, too.
Yeah.
That, I think, and authenticity.
Yeah.
Man, like, you have to be authentic in yourself. I think you could try to put on a mask, you know, for a little bit, and it could work for a little bit, but I don't think you're ultimately going to have, like, the sticking power. But, yeah, that secret weapon, you know, a lot, I've told guys and girls, you know, that are younger sort of coming up that when I found what my thing was that separated me from anyone else in this business, in my mind, that's what I leaned into. And I think that's what you do, and that's how you figure out what your brand is you find what you do best. You know, think of it like as a quarterback. You know, like, you've got pocket passers, you've got guys that can run the ball, you know, like you've got guys that can, that's really good at, you know, play calling. You got guys that can throw the ball, you know, 200 yards, you know, but like finding out what your thing is and then leaning into that, create your offense around what you do best. And that's when you can win, because if you try to be another Luke Combs, there's already a Luke Combs, you're not going to beat him at what he does best. You're just not. Like, not Zach Top. You know, there was not a Zach Top relevant before Zach Top. Like, he was authentically who he is, that throwback to early 80s or late 80s, early, you know, 90s country music. I got news for you. You're not going to beat him at that game, you know, sort of thing. There might be some other artists that come from that world, but to stand there and not move and play guitar and play the style of music and sing the way he sings, you're just not going to do it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So finding what your thing is, lean into it, and that's where I feel like you've got the ability to sort of peek through.
Easier said than done for artists, huh?
For sure. Yeah. It's.
But it's the best advice you can give. I totally agree with you. 100%.
I agree. That's the same stuff that we kind of like preach or talk to people. People ask me, like, I know what I'm doing all the time, questions, and I know. Right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm like. I don't know who you think you're talking to, but probably not the right person. But realistically, like, what it is it's finding the thing that's the most you version of you.
Yes, and I think turning it, like, turning the most you thing and turning it, like, to 12.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, who
making
you are.
A caricature.
Yeah, like, make, like, it's still who you are.
Yeah.
But turning the dial all the way past 10, you know, to amplify that is, like, what your artist, you know, artistry, I think, is the most relatable, I feel like, you know.
When, as you're talking about, you know, you had 3 minutes to show someone exactly what you are. Think about that when it's one song that they're listening to on a playlist, or maybe they stumbled upon it, or they see you on socials. You have that chance to catch this person and make them fall in love with what you're doing and or the song that you have, right?
Absolutely.
So each of those swings is that amplified version of yourself, in my opinion.
Yep. Without a doubt.
I love that. Well, we haven't talked about the music that you've been releasing yet. Why don't we jump into that a little bit, too?
Yeah, so before we went out to film for the road, I had already sort of been thinking of what is next for me musically. Yeah. And I feel like my sound has evolved over the years as I've been able to sort of dial it in a little bit more to what I've always sort of felt it needed to be in my mind. I just didn't really know how to like make that like a thing and how make it actually like come out. And so my roots in music has always been like 90s country. But if I look at 90s country, I look at 90s country as like there's eras within the eras of 90s country. Like 91 versus 99, sound-wise, is completely different.
For sure.
And so I even looked at it a little bit further, and I'm like, all right, what I really identify with the most is like 96 to like 2001, 2002 country. Like that is technical terms. That's when like Pro Tools got involved, and you still had like incredible like musicianship met technology, and they could make it perfect. And for whatever reason, that style of music and just like the true like craft of a song met with, okay, now we can make these notes perfect, you know, through auto-tune or whatever it may be. Like it just created something really cool in that era for me. And it's when I like learned to sing and how to sing. And I think it's what fits my voice naturally. So I've always known that that era of music was like the roots of my music, but I've wanted to figure out, okay, how do I make it not just the roots, but like become the branches of my career? And so through the years, we would go in and record songs, and I'd have a vision, and I'd we'd get like real close, but not exactly there. And I feel like I finally had unlocked what that was going to take to do that. And it all went back to like the musicianship of it. Like, you know, so a lot of those guys that played on that era of music are still around today, like the Lonnie Wilsons of the world and Gary Prims. And so I was like, man, what if I bring some of those musicians into what I'm doing? And I still have one or two guys that is more in this newer world that I really identify with that can kind of like help pull this in a little bit tighter. And so we went in early last year and recorded 7 songs. And was just felt so good about where they are. And it was like, man, this is freaking awesome. And also, I was a guy that wore a cowboy hat my entire childhood singing. And I moved to Nashville wearing a cowboy hat. And somewhere along the way, I ditched it for a ball cap. And I just kind of like got away from it. And as I leaned in a little bit more to that late 90s, early 2000s sound, I kind of wanted to do what I thought was truly authentic to me, which is to put a cowboy hat back on, even though I don't think fans or my peers has sort of seen me in that light. And I thought about, all right, I don't really care about what other people think. I'm just wanting to do what I do, you know, sort of thing. And so we put the cowboy hat back on, and right before the show aired, we released 3 songs from that batch of 7. And the title track was Cat in a Hat, which I felt like was the perfect introductory of me wearing a cowboy hat. Like the hook of the song is Bear This Cat in a Hat When the Good Lord Calls Me Home. It's kind of like planting my flag in the dirt of like, hey, we put the hat back on. It's here to stay. And I'm just going to do what I do, you know, and like what feels the most natural to me and not worry about, well, is the cowboy hat thing in like Morgan Wallen wears a ball cap and Luke Combs wears a ball cap. And both of those are 2 of the biggest artists in our format. So you got to wear a ball cap to be able to be there. You know, it's like, no, like just do what you know, yeah. And the rest will figure itself out. So excited about this next batch of music. We're going to go back in the studio, record some morning music that is all in that same vein. And my vision is to bring an era of music that is that late 90s, early 2000s, back in today's world, because I feel like there's such a hunger for that like style of music. Like think of early McGraw, early Chesney, you know, the ballads of Mark Wills, that kind of stuff. I think is sort of like there's a little bit of a lane that's missing there. Like, you know, back to Zach Top, he's got that early 90s stuff covered, like the Alan Jackson, you know, the George Strait in my mind, like that's he's got his stamp on that. I'm looking at like that next wave of like where the green grass grows and, you know, Kenny Chesney's I Go Back, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, There Goes My Life, you know, that kind of stuff, you know.
I hear a little, in Cat in the Hat specifically, even some Brad, some of the humility and sort of like lightheartedness of
Yeah, yeah. And that song particularly, I feel like that is one that's probably the lightest that I would want to go. You know, we definitely have got some other songs, like a song like Bible in a House Fire.
Yep.
Like, I was always such a fan of songs back in those days that had like an incredible like hook. And like, I'd never heard Bible in a House Fire before. And so writing a concept song, you know, instead of just a surface level song of, you know, I love you, you know. And so I want to have elements of that in my music too, of like when they listen to the hook, they're like, man, like, it's essentially a love song, but we've never heard it done in that way, you know, with that type of hook, you know. So that's important to me as well.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well, man, it's been cool to get to catch up. As you said, like, we haven't really got to sit down and just get to hear more of the story. I mean, I've known you and your music for a long time, but just to get to hear this journey of the road and the reinvigoration of what it did for you as a person and career wise is amazing.
Yeah,
too.
Man. Thank you guys so much for having me. We've got to do another Raze Rowdy event. Like,
dude,
let's call me, man.
Hell
let's
yeah.
let's do something, man.
We'll,
like,
we'll holler at
we'll get
people.
The OGs back, you know, and like do a night, you know, like that'd be fun.
Dude, that sounds great. Yeah. I'd love that. We moved the writers around to the local.
Okay.
And man, it just feels like home.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then we have the full band showcase over at Odie's, which is like venue level production for that full band showcase.
Man, that's incredible. Call me anytime. I'm all about it. We'll do it.
We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening to the Raze Rowdy podcast. If you haven't watched The Road, I'm sure you can stream it on the
platform.
Paramount Plus.
I have Paramount for Star Trek, so boom.
And make sure you follow along with Adam. All the new music is going to be dropping soon, hopefully.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, guys, appreciate it. Cheers. Was the Raze Rowdy podcast.
Bye.